Hello, and welcome to Field Lab Earth, the podcast that's all about past and present advances in the fields of agronomic, crop, soil, and environmental sciences. Today, we'll be talking to Dr. Haya Bogana about hydrological observatories. What is a hydrological observatory? What kinds of questions can they answer? How are they working together today? Answers to all these and more coming right up. I'm your host, Abby Morrison. Let's talk about science. Hi, Haya. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you on the show. So why don't we get started here and you could just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. I was born in northern Germany, close to the North Sea, in a region called East Frisia. There I grew up on a dairy farm with more than 100 hectares of arable land, which is not a lot for United States, I know. But for Germany, 100 hectares was quite a lot. Throughout my childhood, I used to help my parents on the farm, and this provided me with a deep insight in the relevance of proper soil management for food production. And this was also one of the reasons why I chose to study geography after my graduation. I studied geography at the universities of Münster and Bonn, and my diplom thesis was on transport of heavy metals in soils. And after that, I worked as a research assistant at the University of Bonn. Here, my research moved from field to catchment scale, and I focused on solute and sediment transport. After finishing my PhD, I was lucky to get a postdoc position at the Research Center Jülich, which is actually one of the largest national labs in Germany. Then later on, I started to work as a project coordinator of the so-called Terreno project. And in the past 15 years, my research focused on the development of hydrological monitoring systems, like, for instance, wireless sensor networks, and the use of hydrological data for better understanding of environmental processes. Still, I'm doing also some lectures at Bonn University and at the ETH Zurich in Switzerland. And recently, I've submitted my habilitation thesis on wireless sensing of soil moisture.
Yeah, and then we're going to be talking about hydrological observatories today. We recently had a special section published in one of our journals, Vados Zone Journal, about them, for which you were the guest editor, that's correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Perfect. So to kind of set the stage here, there's a couple of terms that we want to cover. So can you explain what catchments are and then what hydrological observatories are?
Yeah, sure. So catchment or basin, that's actually any area of land where precipitation is collected and drains off into a common outlet, such as into a river, bay, or any other body of water. In this way, the catchment acts as a funnel for collecting all the water within the area and channeling it into a single point. A simple analogy is a bathtub, for instance, in which the container represents the catchment and the waste drain represents the catchment's outlet. Of course, in reality, it is much more complicated. In reality, the catchment is separated from adjacent basins by a catchment divide, which can be ridges, hills, or even mountains. In a catchment, water includes all the surface water from runoff, snowmelt, or nearby streams that run downslope towards this common outlet, as well as the groundwater underneath the earth's surface. In addition, a portion of the water that enters the groundwater system beneath the catchment may flow towards the outlet of another catchment because groundwater flow directions do not always match those of the overlying drainage network. In hydrology, we use catchments as logical units for studying the movement of water within the hydrological cycle because the majority of water that discharges from the catchment outlet originated as precipitation falling on the basin.
You mentioned hydrology, and there's these hydrological observatories. I was really fascinated in reading your introductory paper to find out some of the history and purpose of these observatories. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay. Hydrological observatories are providing long-term data on a river's runoff, as well as regional climate trends. By analyzing long-term runoff data, it is actually possible to assess the characteristic sensitivity of the catchment to precipitation. This depends mainly on the catchment's geology, the soil properties, vegetation types, the topography, and also by the catchment size. But also human interventions can influence the runoff, for instance, like water reservoirs or irrigation measures. So the response of stream runoff to precipitation has been investigated already by generations of hydrologists. This is useful in various ways, for instance, for the analysis of extreme runoff events, for better understanding of hydrological processes, and also for testing hydrological models. And often also paired catchment analysis are accomplished. In such studies, the flow regime of two catchments which have similar physical characteristics is compared. And this helps to identify the impact of a disturbance on the flow regime. For instance, the investigation of effects of land use change or land use treatments like afforestation or deforestation in terms of water yields, flood events, or, for instance, water quality. The use of catchments as hydrological observatories dates back more than 100 years. The first hydrological observatory was established in 1903 in the region of Emmental in Switzerland, with the goal to determine the effect of afforestation on runoff production. And I find it really fascinating that this hydrological observatory is still operated and that the data is still freely available, which is not often the case in Europe, at least that I know of. The first hydrological observatories in the United States were established a few years later. They include the Wagon Wheel Gap experiment in Colorado and the Covita Hydrological Laboratory in North Carolina. In the 1950s and 60s, the number of experimental catchments strongly increased with the aim to empirically determine the influence of human intervention on hydrological systems. For instance, there is the Hubbard Brook Observatory in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. This was the first hydrological experiment that also studied geochemical balances at the catchment scale. And here scientists have discovered the existence and the origins of acid rain. This was only possible with the long-term hydrological measurements that were done at the Hubbard Brook catchment. And soon after this, the US Geological Survey initiated the Hydrologic Benchmark Network of 57 catchments covering whole United States, in areas that are minimally affected by human activities. These data were used to study time trends and to serve as controls for separating natural from artificial changes in other streams. Today, there are a number of different networks of observatories worldwide, like, for instance, the Critical Zone Observatory Network, which started in the US, but now we have them worldwide, and the Long-Term Ecological Research Network, or ELTER. And these are just two examples.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated by this topic, just to find there's so much history or just different things that we wouldn't necessarily tie back to them. Like you mentioned acid rain, and I didn't realize that that was something that they found through these observatories.
Yeah.
So it's really fascinating and cool just to see how they've developed over time or how they connect to each other. But one thing, can you give us kind of a physical picture of what these observatories look like? Are they, you know, on a dam? Are they a building off in the woods somewhere? Can you tell us more about what the actual facilities are like?
Sure. It's not so easy. Hydrological observatories are often established and operated independently. So for this reason, the resources and facilities are often not standardized or uniform, and therefore these observatories can be very different depending on their main purpose. But we can say that classical observatories operate at least one or more climate and runoff gauging stations, and often river water quality is also determined using chemical sensors for continuous measurements or by taking regular water samples. Now, more recent modern hydrological observatories are also complemented with geophysical and remote sensing measurements, which provides spatial information on land use and soil properties within the catchment. And today, the concept of hydrological observatories is more and more relevant for a diversity of environmental issues beyond hydrology, like, for instance, biodiversity or socioeconomic problems.
That kind of brings us to our next question. Can you tell us what some of those specific questions that the observatories in the special section are trying to answer?
Yes, sure, of course. One pressing question is how climate change will affect the hydrological fluxes, like, for instance, water flow in rivers on the long term. So will the river suffer more often from low flow conditions, which are problematic for aquatic communities, or will extreme rainfall events more often lead to flood damages? Another important question is related to the effects of land use change. It has been already observed that land use change can have a profound effect on the fluxes of solutes and sediments in rivers. For instance, deforestation can increase erosion rates on the land, and this leads to lower water quality and higher sediment loads in the river water. And this in turn can lead to problems in the management of reservoirs for instance, drinking water production. So hydrologists use long-term data sets from these hydrological observatories to answer some of these questions. To give you one example, using the long-term data from the Emmental Hydrological Observatory I mentioned, here hydrologists found for the first time that afforestation can actually help to reduce high flow events and to sustain base flows. Furthermore, hydrologists can use the data to check how well models are able to predict these hydrological processes, even under changing climate conditions.
Can you tell us some of the, like, if hydrological observatories had a toolbox, what are some of the common tools or methods that they're using to answer these questions?
Yeah. So for the hydrologist, the flow meter for gauging runoff is what the telescope is for astronomers. So measuring the stream flow or runoff is one of the fundamental methods in hydrology, and it has a very long tradition worldwide. So one interesting fact is that along the Nile, for example, flood level gauges, so-called nilometers, have been run for thousands of years already. So runoff gauges are one of the most important tools used in hydrological research. Similar important are climate stations. With climate stations, we measure precipitation, which is the main input of water into the catchment. But we can measure also important meteorological variables, which are needed to estimate evaporation rates. So evaporation, soil moisture, is transferred from the land surface back into the atmosphere. Therefore, it is a significant water loss for many catchments and thus needs to be measured or estimated to close the water balance. In modern observatories, we use so-called eddy covariance towers to directly measure evaporation.
Wow. I'm so fascinated because I don't have a science background. Just to hear some of the technology that you guys use every day is really neat for me.
Yeah.
But moving on, so as part of this special section, your introductory paper goes over on a high level all of the different observatories that were submitted. Can you tell us about some of the different observatories that are in the special section? I know one that is near and dear to you as a scientist is the Torino, so why don't we maybe start with that network?
Yes, of course. I really like to do that because I'm one of the Tirreno coordinator in Germany. So that's really a very important project for me since many years. I started this 10 years ago. So Tirreno, that stands for Terrestrial Environmental Observatories. And so it was initiated in 2008 by the German Helmholtz Association. That's the biggest research association in Germany. And the project aims at combining observation with dedicated larger scale experiments or catchment scale, and also integrated modeling. And the goal is to move forward our understanding of the functioning of terrestrial systems. Another aim is to catalog the long-term ecological, societal, and economic impact of global change in Germany. To this end, we selected four hydrological observatories, which are representative for Germany as well as other Central European regions. And here, these regions also show the highest vulnerability with respect to climate change effects. Furthermore, these regions can be expected to represent dominant terrestrial processes and the different role of, for instance, groundwater, surface water, the soils, and their links to the atmosphere. All of the selected regions are either already affected by climate change or will likely be in the foreseeable future. For instance, the northeastern and central German lowland regions, so these are two observatories, are characterized by a strong coupling between groundwater and water availability for food production. So therefore, the risk of summer droughts is quite high. And in future, with global warming, further decrease in summer precipitation is expected. Another observatory is located in the Rhine Valley region. And here, the strongest increase in temperature is expected in Central Europe. And on the other hand, the risk of flooding is also predicted to increase due to more extreme precipitation events. And finally, there is an observatory located in the pre-Alpine region. And here, this region shows increasing risks of landslide events since, due to the increasing temperatures, hill slopes are becoming more unstable. So the data from these four observatories are used for various purposes. For instance, we want to study the impact of land use changes, of course, climate change, and also socioeconomic developments and human interventions on hydrological processes. Also, the long-term data can be used to test existing and newly developed model concepts. And together with these models, we want to develop decision support systems for environmental management and to develop early warning system. One example, for instance, is what colleagues in Leipzig already have developed. It's a drought monitor for Central Europe. So you can go to the webpage of the drought monitor and see how the drought is going to develop in the next weeks. And this is based on the data which we gathered in our observatories. And finally, we want to foster collaboration between different disciplines. In addition to hydrology, we want to include soil science, meteorology, biology, and social sciences in order to advance environmental research. So we strongly believe that this is the only way to come up with more advanced prediction for this changing world we have.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be sure to include your email in the show notes. So if anyone from those fields is interested in reaching out, please do so.
Yeah, but that would be really great.
Yeah. So for these observatories, is it like a set number of scientists that are working at any given observatory at any time, and they're just kind of the set staff that does all of the research out of there? Or is it more like, for example, like a lab where you could say, hey, I have this specific project I want to work on. Can I come work in this space for a while and then someone else will come in? How does that work?
Yeah. So in the Tirreno project, the money was only given for the infrastructure. So we got 12 million euros in 2008, and the involved institutions like our Aquosphere Institute, we invested in these monitoring systems, and in, let's say, 3 years, we developed our observatories. And then we associated universities as partners. And from the universities, there came also master students and PhD students, and they worked in our observatories. And that is what we want. We want this collaboration with the scientific community, with universities. So it's not only, let's say, observatory for the national labs, but we really like to foster these collaborations. So it's open for everybody who is interested to work in these observatories.
That's super neat. I like that a lot. So then there's some other observatory groups that we wanted to talk about. The next one on my list is OZCAR. It's O-Z-C-A-R. Can you talk about that one?
Yeah, right. It's also a nice name, right? So the OZCAR network is it's a really relatively new network. It's a network of so-called critical zone observatories, or CZOs. So OZCAR is actually a network of existing observatory networks. It was launched in 2015 in France. And as you say, the name is written with a Z, which stands for Critical Zone Observatories, Application and Research. The critical zone refers to the thin layer between the surface of the bedrock and the top of the vegetation. So they have a really neat slogan. In short, you can say, in the critical zone, rock meets life. So similar to Terreno, OZCAR integrates many, many research fields to explore the interactions between these different compartments like soil, atmosphere, the vegetation, and the water bodies. And OZCAR gathers and organizes more than 60 research sites worldwide in 21 pre-existing CZOs. And these are operated by very diverse research institutions, mostly also in collaboration with partner institutes in the countries. The main common research focus of OZCAR sites is about monitoring, understanding, and predicting fluxes of water, solutes, gases, and sediments at the Earth's near surface and how these will change in response to climate change. At the moment, the research site of OZCAR are, let's say, loosely connected. There will be a first OZCAR conference, however, next year in Strasbourg. And this will be organized together with the Terreno project. So we are really involved in this. And it will be in end of September, beginning of October next year. So you are all invited to come to this event. Some of the OZCAR observatories have already developed data portals where data can be accessed, freely downloaded. However, a common data portal is still missing. I think they are working on this.
Yeah, that's super awesome that you guys are working together across networks. And it's interesting to see some of the hurdles of being able to share the data in a way that everyone can use. And then there was another one that you mentioned.
Yeah. What I wanted to mention, the AmaCatch project, I found that also very interesting because, I mean, Africa is really data scarce. So there is a really need to do research in Africa. And this AmaCatch project, it's another French observatory, was initiated in the 90s in collaboration with African researchers. The goals of the AmaCatch project is to monitor the impacts of global change in West Africa and to better understand its current and future dynamics. It comprises local research sites in four countries, in Benin, Niger, Mali, and in Senegal. And the researchers have already found very interesting results. For instance, in one of the catchments, they used their comprehensive hydrological observations to show that water uptake by deep-rooted trees is the main driver of groundwater discharge in the dry season. So I think this is very interesting because that these kind of processes are normally not taken into account in hydrological models. So they model the whole globe, also Africa, but these kind of processes are not included, and they should. And these observatories help to better understand this. The project plans to continue their observations to document the evolution of West African ecosystems in the long term. And they hope to get the necessary funding, which is not easy. They want to gather more than 30 years of continuous hydrological observation data. So we really hope that they can continue their project.
Yeah, for sure. That sounds like a lot of important work. Hi, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the show. Interested in learning more? Haya's article, Toward Better Understanding of Terrestrial Processes Through Long-Term Hydrological Observatories, published in Vadosone Journal, is always freely available on our digital library. You can find a link to it in our show notes. Let's get back to the show. So, we've kind of danced around this topic a little bit, but I really want to dive in now. What is so fascinating to me about this project is that these are really worldwide observatories, and it seems that as the field grows, you're seeing more and more use for that global data and looking at a very large view of all of this. So what's interesting is how do you get all of these little pieces to talk to each other? Can you talk about how these observatories communicate with each other? What are the ways that they can share their data? What are maybe some of the hurdles there? Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, that's really an issue. Because I already said that there is a diversity in these hydrological observatories. So there are many local networks, and they are often not talking to each other, and these common data portals are actually missing. So it's sometimes really difficult to get the data. There are some initiatives to connect the different observatories together, to come up to, let's say, continental data portals. For instance, we started the so-called ENOA project in Germany. So this is a European network of hydrological observatories. And in the first place, it is a data platform for European hydrological observatories. But besides making hydrological data available for free to the research community, the ENOA project also aims for improved data analysis and to perform hydrologic forecasts at the European scale. So we have a homepage which you can visit, enoa.net. There you can already download some of the data. And we actually believe that such data platforms can help to better answer the key questions related to climate change and land use change, even at the continental global scale. So we need to come up with data portals which provide the information, these detailed information, really at the global scale and in a very easy way.
So that's maybe a bit of a hurdle, but what are some of the positive results that you guys have seen from these observatories or networks of observatories? You've mentioned a couple already, but do you have any that you'd like to share in particular?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, as I already said, we have a lot of different results, and it's difficult to summarize them because there is such a large diversity of observatories worldwide. But let me take the Ruhr Hydrological Observatory of the Tirreno Network as an example. I know this really by heart because I'm one of the site managers since 10 years or more. Presently, more than 1 billion data sets from more than 500 measurement stations located in this catchment have already been downloaded by researchers from our data portal, and some papers already have been out now. For instance, we analyzed the spatial temporal distribution of soil moisture in one of the test sites before and after a deforestation measure using a large wireless network of 900 soil moisture sensors. I'm quite proud of this network, which we developed at our Agroswale Institute in Jülich. And with this data, we found that soil moisture in the deforested area was significantly higher than in the undisturbed, still forested part. So especially during the summer periods, the soil moisture was very high in the deforested part. And this in turn caused an increase in the frequency of high flows in the stream. So it actually can produce flood events. We also use this extensive data to test and further develop hydrological models. So we use physically based three-dimensional models, which we apply to this catchment. After testing this, we also applied this three-dimensional model to the whole Ruhr Observatory. And later, it was already also applied to the European scale, and it is used to predict water availability at the European continent. In another study, we showed how the prediction of hydrological fluxes and greenhouse gases can be improved using a combination of our long-term data and data assimilation methods. So data assimilation that was initially developed for numerical weather prediction models. It actually combines the model with the observations in an optimal way. So therefore, data assimilation can help to make better use of the large number of available observations. And this will help to make better future prediction of hydrological extreme events, like, for instance, droughts or floods. So the ultimate goal of the research in our observatories should always be to transfer this local information and the methods to the larger scale. So we start at a small catchment scale, and then step by step we go up to the continental or maybe even to the global scale.
That's super awesome. Thank you for doing that research. We appreciate it. So we've talked a lot about some of the larger questions and uses for these observatories, but if you had to kind of sum up in just a brief sentence or two, why is it so crucial that we do this kind of research now?
Yeah, sure. I think it's really crucial. We see already with the current global warming that we are confronted in many regions in the world with more frequent and stronger extreme weather events, and also their consequences such as heat waves, droughts, floods, and forest fires. So the observatories can help to address these pressing environmental problems. They are also crucial for the advancement of our process understanding in data scarce regions, as I already said, in Africa, or some parts of Asia or South America. We have really a data scarcity, and we need to do more measurements in these regions. So hydrological observatories also support the development of integrated hydrological models, and these are really needed to come up with better predictions of the influence of climate change on the hydraulic system. In the past, the hydrological community is already very active, or was already active in operating these observatories worldwide. However, one of the challenges in the coming years will be to better coordinate these efforts. For often we see that hydrologists work only in their own experimental catchments and are not sharing their data. So sharing hydrological data is required not only for improving our regional data analysis, but also to perform hydrological forecasts at larger, perhaps global scales. So for instance, the OSCAR initiative is a good example in this direction. But so far, OSCAR considers only observatories that are managed by French partners. And with this cooperation between Tirreno and OSCAR, that's one step to, let's say, to merge different networks.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really neat. So yeah, that kind of covers some areas of future research. Are there any other places that you see this research growing in coming years?
What I think is, we have observatories in the US. I already counted many observatories, which are partly still maintained. We have lots of observatories in Europe. In China, there is a growing set of observatories. But I think there are still many areas worldwide, in Asia, in Africa, in South America, where there are still wide areas, where there is still almost no measurement at all. And so we need to have more observatories in these regions. So let's say we need to come out of our comfort zone and go out to these places and do some more measurements there and to build up observatories in those regions. And this the data would be really needed to be able to better test the global hydrological models and, which are already used to, to connect the climate scenarios with predictions of hydrological developments. But in many places, I think these models are not good enough. And I mentioned one example, the effect of the deep roots on the groundwater discharge. So this is just one example where we see that there is still a need to put more process understanding in these models. And therefore, we need to have more hydrological observatories worldwide.
Sure. I've got three questions left for you.
Okay.
So the first one is, if people want to learn more about these observatories or this science, where can they go?
Yeah. For instance, you can check our Terreno homepage, www.terreno.net. You can just type in Terreno in Google and you find it on top of the list. And this homepage provides information on the Terreno project. We have our conference announcements, for instance, and some news. And you will find there our regular Terreno newsletter. And this newsletter, which comes two times per year, provides a lot of information on specific Terreno projects and also on people working in the Terreno project. And if you are interested in actual data, you can use our Terreno data portal or the ENOA data portal. Here you can have the data freely available, all kinds of different data and more. Yeah, and if you want to be involve yourself in, for instance, the Terreno project or in the OSCAR project, I strongly encourage young scientists to apply for a position as a, for instance, bachelor, master, or PhD students at one of our Terreno partner institutes. At the moment, we have more than 100 PhD students working already in the Terreno observatories.
Perfect. And that covers a little bit of my next question, which is how to help. One thing I do also want to mention is we do have that special section for VZJ, our journal, that is open access, so anyone can read those articles at any time. And we'll have links to that and all the Terreno stuff in the show notes as well. Are there other ways that people who want to help with this kind of research can get involved?
I mean, we have our conferences. I think to get involved into our research, to learn the people who are already working in the Terreno observatories or in the OSCAR observatories. At these conferences, you can get to learn these people. You can see what they are doing, hearing their presentations and discussing with them at the poster session. I think that would be a really a great way to get involved in this. And as I said, if you are really interested in doing your bachelor, master, or PhD study at one of the Terreno sites, for instance, you just should apply for them. Sometimes we have also announcements for some financed PhD projects. So yeah, I think that's basically what you can do.
Wonderful. And then final question is, what is one fun fact people wouldn't know about you if all they had was your research?
Yeah, besides hydrology, I'm actually a music lover. And I also like really this hi-fi stuff. So I'm a little bit a hi-fi freak, as I have to admit. And this is because I'm not able to play any instrument myself. So I'm really putting much effort in getting best sound of out of my records. I love all kinds of music, from ABBA to Frank Zappa and jazz and classic.
Do you have any album recommendations for listeners?
I've lots of CDs from Miles Davis, so Kind of Blue from Miles Davis, I think that's one of my it's one of the best record I would recommend. So especially for someone who wants to start with jazz music, Kind of Blue is really a good starting point. It's a great record.
Wonderful. I will be sure to check that out myself, as yeah, I hope to grow in my knowledge of jazz music.
Yeah, do that.
So that would be great. Thank you for that recommendation. And thank you so much for your time. It is just an honor and a pleasure to talk to someone who is so well-versed in the field and what's happening worldwide with it. So thank you for all of your efforts to really connect all of these pieces and do all of the research to really help us all. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you for listening to Field Lab Earth. You'll find a link to today's paper and other resources for this episode in our show notes or on our website. If you have any questions, comments, or recommendations for show topics, please contact us at podcast@sciencesocieties.org or on Twitter @FieldLabEarth. If you'd like to hear more content like this, please subscribe, and don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes or anywhere else you find your podcast if you like our show. This podcast is a joint production of the Tri-Societies, the American Society of Agronomy, Crop Science Society of America, and Soil Science Society of America. Special thanks to Lobo Loco for the use of their song Spook Castle on the intro and outro of our show. Opinions and conclusions expressed by authors are their own and are not considered as those of the American Society of Agronomy, Crop Science Society of America, Soil Science Society of America, its staff, its members, or its advertisers.